Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
The more people in the world that show that we're supporting this movement and supporting the 99%, the more people will listen. The more the politicians will listen, hopefully.
Hopefully, according to people in the movement, and the Occupy Wall Street protests are 1 month old today. How much are the politicians listening? What impact are these protests having? We will talk about that as our first topic today. But before we get to it, we want to get you in on an experiment for today's show in which we are crowdsourcing a conversation starter. In other words, you come up with a question for a call-in segment that we'll do an hour from now. We're inviting you right now to post a question to our website that you would like other listeners to answer. What question that you might ask might start a good conversation? We're crowdsourcing a conversation starter today. Go to WNYC.org and click on Brian Lehrer Show. The deal is post a question for a call-in segment, and 1 hour from now, around 11 o'clock, we will do a call-in where listeners answer a question that you have asked. So post a question now to WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. The idea is simple. Many days on this show, as you know, we do call-in segments where we have no guest. We just put out a question for you all to answer and tell us your thoughts or opinions about or your experience with whatever. But in keeping with our open source ethic, today we will not just crowdsource the answers to important questions. We will crowdsource the questions. What kind of question do you want to ask of your fellow listeners? Be creative. It can be anything, political, personal, philosophical, anything. You know the sorts of questions that we might ask. Can Occupy Wall Street change the world? Or are you a tiger mom? Or what did you hear at your weekend religious services? We asked that one last Monday. Or how much has your health insurance gone up this year? Or if you're an immigrant, give us the headlines over the last few days from your country of origin. What media are you consuming from back there? We've asked that question before. Or what's the best concert you ever saw? All kinds of questions. They're conversation starters because that's what we do here, conversations that matter, or we hope they matter. But for today, we will crowdsource the conversation starter. So this hour, we are taking your suggested listener questions on our webpage. Just post them online. Next hour, we will choose some of the questions that you post. We'll open the phones and callers will answer your questions. So make it interesting. Think like a producer. Think like me, God forbid. What question would begin a conversation that matters? Post it now to WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show and then tune in an hour to see which questions we choose and how people answer your questions. All right. All right. Back to Occupy Wall Street. 1 month old today, September 17th, it all started in Zuccotti Park. So what impact are they having? This weekend, the protesters in New York were joined by groups around the world. So we know that the movement is spreading to Occupy Portland, Occupy Chicago, Occupy Pocatello. It was in Rome. It was elsewhere. There was some violence in Rome, which is the thing that most led the news. But it was nonviolent mostly in Rome and just about everywhere else. And they did get some attention from the president, who mentioned them in his remarks at the Martin Luther King Memorial dedication ceremony.
If he were alive today, I believe he would remind us that the unemployed worker can rightly challenge the excesses of Wall Street without demonizing all who work there.
So is he in the movement or is he an object of the movement? What impact are the protests having on the national and the international debate? Listeners, you tell us, 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. And joining me for this is David Weigel, political reporter for Slate. Dave, welcome back to the show. Thanks for doing this.
Oh, thanks for having me again.
And again, listeners, what impact do you think Occupy Wall Street is having? And we'll throw in another question, since there seems to be some confusion, accidentally or on purpose, about this, and that is, what is the movement for? What does Occupy Wall Street want? Can you answer that question? 212-433-WNYC. What does Occupy Wall Street want, and what impact are they having so far at 1 month old? 212-433-9692. So, Dave, let's start here. We played that clip of the president. How much do you think politicians are paying attention?
They're paying a lot of attention. They're The movement's lucked out a bit in that Washington has already kind of run out the clock and the options of what it's going to do. I mean, it's become clear that everything that's going to happen in Congress is basically going to be a last-minute compromise. It's become clear that everyone's jockeying for the presidential race. So instead, the mood is ripe for a sort of existential conversation about what government should be doing. And the people in government in D.C. certainly are asked about it frequently. They mention it frequently to make their points. The presidential candidates mention it. They're paying a lot of attention. At the same time, I would add, politicians are a little bit more circumspect in what they're saying. Conservative groups have been looking for ways to disprove that the movement is anything. I mean, Andrew Breitbart's website, Tea Party groups, James O'Keefe, they're approaching a negative way. Politicians so far are just kind of analyzing it to make their points.
What'd you think of the president's clip there? If he were alive today talking about MLK, I believe he would remind us that the unemployed worker can rightly challenge the excesses of Wall Street. Aha, he's with the movement. But then he goes on to say, without demonizing all who work there. And actually, I guess people from within the movement say that too. But was that tepid support? Was that him trying to hitch his wagon? What do you make of it?
It was a... What's the word for it? Not a dodge, but it was just a safety he threw in there in case the movement becomes violent in some way that becomes politically dangerous. I mean, this is what has brought down movements on the left in the past. Movements to the right, too, but not recently. You know, you wouldn't have wanted to be on the record endorsing Students for a Democratic Society, for example, in 1968, knowing what would happen in 1969 and 70. And there, because of the way the movement works and because people are occupying public places for days at a time, nights at a time, and clashing with the police, you know, over that, they're just getting into more scraps than the Tea Party did. So I think mainstream Democratic politicians want to be careful. Also, if you want to be really cynical about it, Occupy Wall Street isn't raising any money from the business industry, and Barack Obama is. So he's threading a needle, I think, pretty well.
You spent 2 days with the protesters, and you called your report the birth of the post-Obama left, which, again, raises the question of whether, you know, it's supportive of him or critical of him.
Well, I was disappointed. You can meet at any one of these rallies some people who never supported Obama and are proud of never having supported Barack Obama. But you meet more people who voted for him really thinking it was their last-ditch attempt at using politics to get what they wanted. I mean, these people who are either voted for the Kennedys or were optimistic about doing so. They never were really optimistic about Bill Clinton. They saw this once-in-a-generation chance to really change America, and they think it's gone, so they're being realistic about about what they can do now. Now that realism at this point is taking the form of a lot of activism that doesn't have an obvious goal. But it's still, they've already kind of moved on from thinking they can get anything done in Washington. And if they're politically savvy, I think the writer John Chait, a lot of writers have made this point, you know, it's hard to actually get meaningful social change without a movement outside of the political system. This is how Republicans did so well for the last 2 years. This is how the anti-war movement in the 70s, 60s and 70s did so well. Even if they're kind of post-Obama and done with him, they feel like they might be able to bail him out him personally, he's not longer that is relevant. They might be able to get their causes enacted by doing this and getting out in the streets.
David Weigel, political reporter for Slate, as we talk about the impact of the Occupy Wall Street movement as it turns 1 month old today. They began in Zuccotti Park on September 17th. And Pete in Wanacue, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Yes, hello. Yeah, my comment on this, if that's what you're looking for, is that really it's about time that the rest of America rose up and sort of consolidated. I think that's the effect of this, is that it's bringing to the forefront or to realization of most of us that are hardworking and suffering, let's say, from the excesses of some people, not all people. As you said, we shouldn't demonize everybody on Wall Street. Which are driving many of the financial problems that we've had. Certainly they drove the financial crisis, many other factors, of course, but that occurred, on Wall Street
so
with the banks.
So you think they're bringing those problems just more into the mainstream public debate and discussion?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, it's sort of like, as I was saying to your screener, kind of like the Arab Spring over here, you know. It's about time we all looked at each other and said, oh, you've been thinking that too? That's exactly the way I felt, yeah. I know personally, for the last 10 years. And it's about time we all rose up and said to that group, that small group that's taking the excess, pay your fair share, pay your fair taxes, and stop using financial instruments that in the long run really just harm the rest of us for your own greedy purposes.
Pete, thank you very much. That's a pretty good statement of it, actually, Dave, I think. You know, one other way I was thinking of it was, yeah, everybody already knew that there was a lot of unemployment in America. What the Occupy movement, Occupy Wall Street movement has perhaps succeeded in doing is bringing the question of inequality or the concept of inequality into the mainstream of that discussion.
Right. When Republicans have talked about it, as I said, they've been pretty circumspect. They haven't really attacked it the way they've attacked to the anti-war movement. But they have a problem with what I guess Eric Cantor called Americans pitting against other Americans. And what this movement's trying to do, I think with some success, is redefine what that means. They have to deal with, I think, a real information problem in America. If you look at polling on whether people think they're middle class, for example, or whether they think they receive government benefits, people believe things about the government and about their own finances that are vastly out of proportion to reality. I mean, most people who don't think they're middle class think they are. People who don't think they receive government benefits who do receive government benefits think they don't. They think they're independent. Even these are people who receive, you know, good tax breaks, Social Security, Medicare, and I think this movement's been pretty successful so far in just getting away from those issues and saying, look, the question is, why has inequality been rising so much over the last 10 years? Why are CEOs being paid so much? And it's kind of push this populism into a useful political space, whereas before it was really unfocused. I mean, think of in early 2009, there was this burst of anger over AIG executives getting bonuses after they had been bailed out. Congress actually acted, you know, basically passing a bill of attainder to make it impossible for those guys to get this money. But that rage didn't go anywhere. What this movement's trying to do is define the problem and to explain inequality, which most people don't really want to understand. I mean, this is, you know, people, Americans, I'm paraphrasing Steinbeck here, just Americans who are not rich think they're temporarily so. And what the movement's trying to do is saying, no, we're in this together and you're going to have this economic status for a while. Why are you impoverished or why are you not succeeding like you should when some people are making so much money?
Right. And, you know, some stats that I've known for a while that I think are more out there in the general discussion now, that 1%, the top 1% of the population, owns 40% of the wealth in the country, whereas it was about 25% of the wealth 20 years ago, that they make 25% of the income, this top 1%, whereas it was about half that 25 years ago. You know, these are the things that are suddenly penetrating, I think, around the country. And no matter what side of that people come down on, ultimately, these are new data points that I think have successfully started to enter the national discourse. But listeners, what impact do you think the Occupy Wall Street movement is having as it turns 1 month old today? Steve in Bloomfield, you're on WNYC. Hi, Steve.
Good morning. Hi, it's a pleasure to speak to you.
Thanks for calling.
Yeah, you know, I want to speak mostly to the what seems to be the great overarching disappointment people have with the lack of a treatise or a manifesto or a list of demands and such that comes up all the time. And it occurred to me specifically those few weeks ago when the Occupy Wall Streeters were doing their makeup zombie march and such. And I realized this is, you know, old school merry prankster kind of street theater stuff. And I realized that all they're trying to do is to remind people that you can protest. It almost doesn't have to get any more complicated than that. And I only say that because it seems like about a half a generation has come up forgetting that they're allowed to do that.
Yeah, well, of course, if we look back over the last 10 years, there were big protests before the Iraq War. It went ahead anyway, but there were big protests in this country and around the world before the Iraq War. Certainly the Tea Party was also a protest movement, even though it came from politically the other side. So I wonder if people ever forgot that they can protest.
Well, I only say that speaking from the suburban eye view, where the reaction to the Iraq war were many protests. But again, these were the same people I would see fighting over parking spaces. So it seemed kind of impure, if you know what I mean. And I think
thank you. So there's no Occupy Bloomfield, Connecticut yet.
Not right this second. But I just mean, for lack of a, like I say, a manifesto or a list of demands, this is cutting down to the core of pure protest.
Steve, thank you very much. And Kevin in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hi.
Hi. One theme that I've heard resonated quite frequently among the protesters is that it's the banking industry and it's the finance world that really has a determinative effect on the political system. And with regard to vis-a-vis the wars in Iraq, the wars in Afghanistan, and the very detrimental predicament they've put us in with regard to our own economy here at home. I mean, don't forget, people, fighting these wars is costing money. It's over $1 trillion so far when you combine the Iraq effort as well as the Afghanistan effort. Okay. But with regard to the political impetus that actually drove those wars, I think it's more the media that they need to be looking at, not the finance world. Now, there's a documentary I'd like to share with the audience. It's called Who Rules America? And it's published by National Vanguard Books, but it's actually something that names the names with regard to the media corporations, all right, what their agenda is, and I think it's an eye opening documentary. And again, it's really the media that drives the political system with regard to public opinion, with regard to what the politicians will kowtow to with regard to foreign policy. And when you really look at the situation overseas in our foreign policy, very suicidal foreign policy when you think about 9/11, because it has a tremendous blowback.
I don't want to get off on too much of a tangent here away from Occupy Wall Street, Kevin, but I take your point. By the way, Brooke Gladstone, the host and managing editor of On the Media, would tend to disagree. Her book is about how the media is more of a reflection than a determinant. But that, of course, is a big conversation that people can have different points of view on. But Dave Weigel from Slate, I want to get back to that caller's point on Occupy Wall Street, which
yes,
was twofold. And
hey, good. How are you?
Kevin, Dave is still there?
I'm here.
We heard him say that it has driven home the idea, or driven into the national debate, the idea that the banks not only do what they do, they drive the political discourse. They drive policy because they have so much influence. And I think he's right that it has brought campaign finance, in a sense, which is, you know, a yawn for a lot of people, even though policy wonks are totally into it. It has driven this campaign finance question of the banks having so much influence over the political sector into the national debate. I'm not sure that they've tied it too successfully, whether they've been trying or not, to the wars. But in terms of the banks having control of the government to the extent that they do, I think that's another thing that's really bubbled up as a result.
Well, it has, and this had been bubbling up, but in a kind of unfocused way. I went to Wisconsin when people were protesting the changes in union collective bargaining and other laws that were kind of smashed into a budget control package. And that was an argument that was coming up there, but people couldn't quite figure out what the problem was. The argument they've come up with is that there's undue influence by people who don't actually contribute much to the country, who don't produce much, who just move money around. I think that's another difference between this movement and other movements. When one of the callers was talking about how some of the protesters are the same people you see at every protest, that's very true. But the protests over the Iraq War, some of that was very, you know, was cultural, about why this war was, you know, why this war this president was declaring this war. I mean, some of those people have gone away as Barack Obama's continued these wars. This is much more specific about businesses that people didn't really understand very well, that made lots of money using, you know, systems they invented, CDOs they invented, mm-hmm, and then using that to influence the political system to deregulate themselves further. I mean, it's actually, I think, a pretty sophisticated critique, certainly compared to what most protest movements have been doing. I mean, I covered the Tea Party pretty closely, and the Tea Party had a sophisticated critique of how government control, government spending worked, but it also got led down a lot of alleyways and convinced that this or that election, this or that bill would fix everything. I mean, this movement so far, I think, is a bit more unfocused because its critique is so broad.
Do you think, as somebody who covered the Tea Party so closely, that this movement could have as much impact?
Well, the Tea Party always had a goal in mind, which was winning Congress and beating Barack Obama. When I say the Tea Party, I mean the activists basically wanted to do that, and the groups that came in to help manage the movement wanted to do that. They have a long-term plan of getting enough conservatives in there to really roll back the government. This movement doesn't have that plan. I think the role it can play is in just forcing discussion of inequality, which is, again, just something Americans are not really comfortable talking about. It's very easy to characterize any talk like that as anti-capitalist, anti-American, even though people do feel that way. I mean, that's what you're finding. When you see polls that show 53% of people holding the belief that these protesters are right, even though there's, plenty of video of them dressing as zombies or getting arrested, there's a lot of this kind of undercover video of them saying embarrassing things or the occasional anti-Semite getting into the fold. People agree with this critique, and I think that's the way they're having the impact. If they change the discussion about what inequality is, I mean, you saw this question come up in the Republican debate. I think only Newt Gingrich has asked about it. So it hasn't penetrated politics at that level. But sometimes there is something that moves or bends the conversation about what's acceptable in politics. The Tea Party proved to be good at elections and that. So far, I only see evidence that Occupy Wall Street will be good at that piece of it, of making it acceptable to ask what these banks actually do, ask whether deregulation makes much sense. And look, because the other reason it's less political is I think some of the villains that will get exposed in this process are going to be Democrats, are going to be people like Bill Clinton, people like Robert Rubin, people like Barney Frank. I think that's how it's having the impact so far.
Dave Weigel, political reporter for Slate.com on the impact of Occupy Wall Street as it turns 1 month old today. Dave, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up next, we're going to dive deep on Herman Cain's 999 plan. If 9 plus 9 plus 9 equals X, what is the value of X? We'll see what 999 would add up to for your tax bill and for the country. And if you want to ask a question about the 999 plan or give us your impression, you can start doing that now on our webpage at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show or call us up. We will have a reporter on tax policy from Bloomberg News to really pick apart Herman Cain's 999. Coming up next, 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692.